first, we're going to talk about Title IX, which was signed into law 45 years ago tomorrow. It's a groundbreaking anti-discrimination law that's changed the way we think about gender in schools, especially sports. But it's about more than that, and Mary Jo Kane is here to discuss it. She's a professor at the University of Minnesota's Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women. Welcome back to the show. Good to see you.
Good morning, Tom, and thanks for inviting me.
Your questions, maybe you've always had a question about how Title IX does or doesn't work. Maybe you have your own story about how Title IX has affected you. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you're driving. So we think, Mary Jo, of Title IX as this thing that is the reason we have all these women's sports teams in high school and college. Take us back to the history. Was that the problem that Title IX was actually trying to solve?
No, and I think that that's one of the great myths about Title IX. In fact, I've decided, if it's okay with you, to just actually read the statute.
Yeah.
It won't take long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, see if your listeners can think about what's not in it. Because it says, and this is from 1972 June, as you said, tomorrow, the 45th anniversary. Here's the statute. No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving financial assistance.
Federal financial assistance.
Federal, yeah. And so yeah. You will notice that the words sport,
right,
physical activity, uh-huh, are not in the statute. And the original focus was, frankly, to be concerned about gender discrimination for folks like me who would be a faculty member, to make sure that I wasn't being subjected to any gender discrimination compared to, say, my male colleagues who were also faculty members.
I think Phyllis Kahn, the former state legislator who worked at the U for so many years, has stories about how Title IX affected her profession as well.
Absolutely.
So where does the sports thing come along?
Well, what happened is that, you know, it's very difficult to prove gender discrimination, mm-hmm, anymore, just as it is race or any sort of discrimination against minorities. So, for example, let's say that in a particular year I had four publications and my male colleague had two publications in research journals, and but I didn't get twice the pay raise that he did. Mm. Now, I could say, well, I should have, but his comment could be, yeah, but on my two articles, I was the only author. On your four articles, you were first author once, but not four times.
Yeah.
And my journal articles were in better journals than were your articles, which would be debatable.
Yeah.
But what happened with sports is you had a situation where male athletes and athletic departments had been around for a very long time and quite a bit of money invested in them. And then when you compared women's athletic departments, they were either non-existent or the resources weren't available. Just to give you another quote, mm-hmm, about where we were in the state of Minnesota in 1970, mm-hmm, which would give you a sense of the discrimination, meaning the lack of balance, which was so obvious and overt, and that's why it had its greatest impact in sports. Here's a quote from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. In 1970, the Minneapolis School District spent more money on boys' hockey sticks than on the entire girls' athletic budget.
Wow.
So when you bring that before a court, a federal court, because this is a federal law, it's pretty obvious that there's tremendous gender discrimination going on, and that's why sports became the primary focus of Title IX for so long.
Was it also because it was just easier if you have a men's lacrosse team, you just say, okay, now you need a women's lacrosse team, and therefore the duality or the fairness is actually easier to tick and to see on a piece of paper?
Yeah, then it would be clear because you're talking about numbers. But another misconception about Title IX is compliance, meaning that you're in compliance with the law, is not about the number of male sports compared to the number of female sports. It's the number of participation opportunities or slots. And that was another reason why you had such an incredible imbalance, because in the sport of football, for example, you have the average size of a Division I football team is 125, 127, 130.
Right.
You had no female equivalent on the other side. But yes, if you started adding women's sports, meaning participation slots, then it was also easier for the courts to say, okay, you're making progress.
So to go back to the non-sports element of this, you mentioned people like you in faculty positions. Was it more focused on the faculty element that you just described, or was it somehow as focused or more focused on the students and the educational discrimination they might face? I mean, we had race discrimination until Brown versus Board of Education. We had segregation. Was there something comparable going on among the students other than the sports opportunities?
Yeah, I don't remember that the students were a focus. Oh. I think it was really about gender discrimination, really more about employment and other sorts of discrimination. With, again, the key here is that it's federal legislation, civil rights legislation, but it's in educational institutions, unlike, say, Title VII or some other sort of legislation that would try to prevent discrimination within an employment setting.
So have any of the politicians, I think Birch Bayh and Ted Stevens were two of the senators, for example, who were behind this on the Senate side, have any of them ever looked at the sports conversations around Title IX and said that that was an unintended consequence, and I actually regret that that's how it's played out? Or was it a lovely unintended consequence of how that played out?
Well, the unintended consequence, I think, of Title IX, and I don't want to obviously speak for those folks, although just as an aside, in the early 90s, you know, Birch Bayh was from Indiana, and they honored him, the Indiana Law School honored him, and I was the keynote speaker when they did so, and I sat next to him. And he told me the reason that he was so supportive of Title IX, now again, he wasn't focused on sports at that point, was because of his mother and his grandmother and how he felt that they had been discriminated against in terms of their lives on farms and wanting to own farms or at least have farms be inherited by them. So it was really his mother and his grandmother that were driving influences for him. The unintended consequence, Tom, when people are talking about Title IX, is not that sports became so much a focus, because I think people were actually thrilled by that. The unintended consequence that most scholars and educators talk about is the dramatic decline in the number of women head coaches in women's athletics, in the wake of Title IX. So, for example, prior to the passage of Title IX, over 90% of all head coaches in women's sports were female nationwide. Today, it's about 43%.
Why?
Well, we can't prove it, but I think what happened is that, you know, prior to Title IX, first of all, there really wasn't a women's sports program.
Yeah.
And you had a lot of, frankly, women physical educators who were volunteer coaches in their free time. There wasn't any money. There weren't any resources. But once it became federally mandated and it became very clear that every college and high school in this country was going to have to step up to the plate, to use a sports metaphor, and develop a women's sports program, you had jobs and you had salaries and you had benefits. And so men became very interested in those sports, especially team sports. And I think there was I'm not saying it was a conscious discrimination, but athletic directors, I think, said, okay, if we're going to enter the big time of sports on the women's side, then we need to bring in the real coaches, meaning the male coaches.
That sounds like the scenario or phenomenon you hear about where jobs that are thought to be women's jobs or men's jobs, and if a quote-unquote woman's jobs, which is subjective, of course, but if a quote-unquote woman's job suddenly takes on the air or aura of a men's job, if it switches over the years, then lo and behold, the women get shut out and the salaries actually go up at a faster pace.
Yes, they do. And again, I'm not suggesting that men shouldn't be coaches of women's sports, because we have a lot of great male coaches. But I think one of the ironies of Title IX is that when I teach class at the University of Minnesota, before I do my Title IX lecture, I always ask students to say, because everybody's heard about Title IX or of Title IX, but they don't necessarily know what it is. And one of the things that they say is that Title IX forces schools to drop men's sports. Hmm. We can get into that, whether that's true or not. But one of the great ironies of Title IX is that respect to job opportunities, males have fared far better in the world of women's sports than have women.
A quick note about coaches, which is kind of related to what you said, but not at all. But there's just actually just some news today. If you're a women's soccer fan, you might know the name Tony DiCicco, who was the coach of the U.S. team that won the gold at the Summer Olympics in 1996 and then the 1999 World Cup, which was this amazing event in women's sports and World Cup history. And he died yesterday. We just got that news here today. So that's just a sidebar to what we're talking about. As we talk to Mary Jo Kane about Title IX, tomorrow is the 45th anniversary of that law being signed into law, anti-discrimination in education, taking your calls, your questions, and maybe your experiences. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. I think we have an experience from Audrey on the phone, who's calling from Itasca County. Hi, Audrey. What are your thoughts today?
Yeah, hi. I was in high school when the Title IX change came through, and I was I've always been very politically active, and I was always aware of the fact that women were getting short shrift and everything, girls' sports and just about everything else. And so I went to my school and said, we have a bunch of girls that want to play flag football. And they actually put in for my senior year in high school, we had intramural flag football for girls. And they also had a thing where boys were able to, if they were on a sports team after school, were able to claim that as a phys ed so they had, you know, time spent in athletes, but they didn't do the same for girls. And I demanded that they do the same for girls. And so they put this program in, and we were able to get that implemented, which was kind of a big deal for, you know, girls in my school. But also later on, I became a coach of the JV team for the community. And because nobody wanted to do it because the team was so bad and nobody seemed interested. So I took it on. And after 2 years, this team had the best record in this league.
Yeah.
And then the men came in and decided that they needed to take over the job. And they pushed me out. And, of course, by that point, I was grown up and went off and did other things. But that actually happened.
Well, Audrey, thanks for sharing that experience. I appreciate it up in Itasca County. She used the word intramural there, too. Should we differentiate? Were there more intramural sports? I mean, was the idea that intramural, quote unquote, doesn't count? Or, you know, was there a difference between intramural and a full-fledged sport in the way it's counted?
Well, yeah, because especially at the Division I level, which is what the University of Minnesota is, and all the Power Five conferences, you would be talking about access to athletic scholarships. Mm-hmm. And the university would have a legal commitment to fund those kinds of sports. So, yeah, there's a huge difference between highly competitive organized sports versus intramurals. The other thing I want to say about one of the reasons why it was so clear that there was a discrepancy in terms of athletics and thus discrimination and thus the focus on sports versus some other kind of gender discrimination had to do with the way that in the early 70s, when Title IX was first implemented, college athletics was funded and is still funded in Division III. So the way that we tended to fund athletic departments was through student fees. So you would have a situation where at a place like the University of Minnesota, female undergraduates were paying the same student fees as male undergraduates, and yet we know that in the early 1970s that on average women's athletic departments got only about 3-5% of all athletic budget resources. So you would have a situation where female undergraduates were paying they weren't asked to pay only 3-5% of the fee, so they paid student fees and yet were only getting 3-5% return on their investment. And again, that was so obviously discriminatory and out of balance that the focus then became more on let's create more equity in the world of sports.
Mary Jo Kane with me from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport over at the U, taking your questions and calls, 1-800-242-2828. Did it force schools to drop men's sports? You said we could get into that a little more.
There is no question because of Title IX, schools made a decision often to drop a men's sports, but it wasn't because, as you read in the statute, there wasn't anything in the statute that said, and in order to achieve compliance, we have to drop men's sports. There's also nothing in what's called the three-prong test in terms of how a school determines compliance, which we can get into later. But here's what happens if you're an athletic director at a place like the University of Minnesota and you have been told that you are not in compliance with Title IX and need to do something, typically an athletic director has one of three options. Behind door number one, he or she, although it's almost always a he, can add a sport for women and thus increase participation opportunities to the tune of about, Tom, $800,000 a year just to add a new sport. And by the way, that's recurring money. It's not an initial investment, and those costs will only go up. And most athletic directors don't happen to have $800,000 in change sitting around the office. So that's behind door number one. Behind door number two is that you can eliminate a men's sport, save yourself $800,000 a year, and use that for other reasons, again, recurring money. And you then you decrease the gap between the number of participation slots that are out of whack because you've just eliminated a men's sport. And then you can say, hey, don't blame me. Title IX made me do it. Or behind door number three, you can walk down the hall and tell the head football coach that because the average, because the size of an NFL roster is 53, it's absurd that the size of a Division I football team is 130 with 85 full scholarships. So, hey, coach, you're going to have to eliminate some football positions. Or, hey, coach, you're not going to be able to spend the night before all of your home games in a hotel because we need that money. So what do you think you're going to do if you're an athletic director? Are you going to take on the football coach, or are you going to drop the men's swimming team and say, don't blame me, Title IX made me do it? So the reality on the ground is, even though no advocate of women's sports is saying drop men's sports, and nothing in the statute or in the compliance regulations say in order to increase opportunities for women, you have to decrease opportunities for men, on the ground, that's exactly what happened.
Can you remind us, to the best of your knowledge, I know you're not legally involved with it, I don't believe, but that the University of Minnesota has been under a Title IX investigation. This was the situation right before the bowl game where the players boycotted, the football players boycotted, and then they didn't boycott, if you remember that last winter. Where is that right now, and what exactly are they investigating? Do we know?
I don't know that we know, and frankly, what little I do know, I don't want to comment on publicly because I sit on a faculty oversight committee at the University of Student Athletics, and I just, if anything comes down that we have to review or comment on, I shouldn't do that.
It's in. I want to also note there, though, that it's interesting that Title IX doesn't just come up when we talk about sports, that these investigations can happen. When I covered education, I covered a lawsuit in the Anoka-Hennepin School District where students were bullied and there had been some student deaths. And within that lawsuit, one of the claims was a Title IX violation. There was also a claim of the Minnesota human rights violation being violated and the 1964 civil rights law being investigated. Do you know how common it is for discriminatory lawsuits to focus on Title IX, or does it maybe go more towards a civil rights law, you know, things like that? How does that work out legally?
You know, I don't know, and because I'm not a lawyer, I'm sort of hesitant to say. My focus, obviously, and expertise is around the world of sports and how it's impacted, how Title IX as a federal law has impacted the whole world of sports.
Let's go back to the phones here. Adele is in St. Paul. Hi, Adele. Your thoughts here today.
Well, hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you. And I have an anecdote from my years as a high school athlete that was the 3 years after Title IX was passed, and I was a basketball player. And just the anecdote I wanted to tell you was about how, even though we had always had a girls' basketball team and a boys' basketball team, I can remember on more than one occasion when the girls' team would have a varsity game against another school, we would have to use the auxiliary gym, which was basically a basketball court with about 5 feet on either side of the sidelines, while the boys got to use the big glitzy three basketball courts and bleachers thing for their practice. And as a high school student, I didn't have the presence of mind to say, hey, what's up with that? But we all noticed it. All of the girls on the team noticed that we had used the cracker box for our varsity games, while the boys got to use the big, beautiful gym for their practices. So that's my anecdote.
I appreciate the call because I remember that even when I was in high school, a little more recently, Mary Jo, that the boys' games were in the – we had actually two high schools the way it was set up. We had a big enrollment in Illinois there, but It was the bigger of the two gyms where the boys' games were, and it was the smaller of the two gyms where the girls were. But I don't know, was that just following the attendance numbers? You know, there's a chicken and egg thing there, I think, potentially as well.
Yeah, well, there's always the chicken and egg thing, which is, you know, maybe the reason that women's sports, they aren't as supported enough as men's sports is because the schools just don't invest the resources. Mm-hmm. But you always get the message if you're a female involved in sports. That you're just, I mean, yes, we want females to play sports, but we're not going to, males certainly aren't going to cede territory as being the real definition of what it means to be an athlete. I will say, you know, I get this question a lot, which is what is the real impact of Title IX? And I would say that in two generations, we have gone from young girls hoping that there is a team to young girls hoping that they make the team. So there really has been a fundamental shift in terms of what's happened as a result of Title IX, but that doesn't mean we still don't have a long way to go. And I always go back to what's your baseline of comparison? If your baseline of comparison is where are women's sports compared to men, we're not close to being equal. But if your baseline of comparison is where are women's sports now compared to where we were in 1972, our cup runneth over.
Mary Jo Kane with us here. From the University of Minnesota, I want to play a piece of audio from Billie Jean King, the tennis star. I played a little bit of this before the show started. 5 years ago on the 40th anniversary, she spoke before Congress. And she said this. She's going to talk about the battle of the sexes, which I think a lot of people of that age know about. So let's just hear her first and we'll talk about it.
Just a little more than 1 year after the passage of Title IX, I played Bobby Riggs in a much heralded match at the Astrodome in Houston, Texas. This event, which was called the Battle of the Sexes, may have been a tennis match, but to me, it was about social change. I wanted King Riggs to change the hearts and minds of people to more closely align with the legislation of Title IX. I was afraid if I did not win, we would give people a reason to weaken Title IX.
The history, of course, is Billie Jean King did win. Did you see, by the way, there's a movie about this coming out later this year?
I saw that, and she not only won, she won in straight sets.
I think Steve Carell from The Office is going to play Bobby Riggs.
Who's playing Billie Jean King?
Of course, because I'm discriminatory here, Mary Jo. I don't know the answer to that, but
well,
maybe one of my producers will look it up and give me a note here.
Way to go, Tom.
But that point at the end that she made, that this might weaken... what did she mean by that? Why did she think that this tennis match between two adults could potentially weaken Title IX?
Well, because Billie Jean King's a little older than I am, but I grew up in the 50s and 60s in Central Illinois, and I was a pre-Title IX tomboy who didn't have an opportunity to play sports. Forget about scholarships. Sports weren't available to me. And so prior to Title IX, there was this notion that girls shouldn't play sports, or even if they wanted to play sports, they simply weren't good enough to play sports. And I think that Billie Jean King and other pioneers proved that that wasn't true, that female athletes could not only play sports, but could play at the most elite levels of competition under enormous pressure. And so the fear was that if she failed, that would just say, see, we told you women shouldn't play sports.
Yeah.
You know, I think the other thing about Title IX in terms of its social impact 45 years later is that, and related to your question, Tom, and what Billie Jean King was getting at, for the very first time in the history of this country because of Title IX, we have a critical mass of young girls who grow up playing sports. That had never happened before. You'd always had a Billie Jean King here and an Athelia Gibson there, but you never had a critical mass. The other thing you never had, speaking of not weakening Title IX, was a sense of females having an entitlement to sports. It would never occur to the female athletes and females that I teach at the University of Minnesota that if they were good enough and were willing to pay the price, that an opportunity would not be there for them. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the biggest offenders of Title IX are moms and dads who also have a sense of entitlement to the fact that their daughters should have the same opportunities as their sons to go to college, to get an athletic scholarship. So that's a sort of a long-winded way of saying I think that's what Billie Jean meant.
The movie will be called Battle of the Sexes. Emma Stone.
Oh, Emma Stone, great.
Will play Billie Jean King. Thank you to my producers for saving me from what is already a very embarrassing moment. And yes, Steve Carell will play Bobby Riggs in that movie. On the phone, actually, was listening in Mankato, Todd Hoffner, who's the head football coach down at MSU Mankato. Hi, Todd. I'm glad you were listening, and I'm glad you called in. What are your thoughts here today?
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm a longtime listener, NPR, so I love the program, love listening, and often catch things as I'm driving places, so I happen to catch this program, and I think it's a very interesting topic. I'm a big proponent of women's athletics. I think it's important. I think it's a driving force in keeping equity, and I think it's a good thing. So my question stems from, you know, recently I've read in the news, and I don't know a lot of information about what's going on at the University of North Dakota with dropping women's hockey, which is my alma mater as a graduate student. And then also, I understand there was a lawsuit, and I'm distant from this also, at the University of Minnesota Duluth involving women's hockey. So I guess my question is this a trend that's happening because of smaller attendance numbers and those kind of things? And how do these programs get away with dropping sports that are women that are supposed to be equal?
Todd, thanks for the question. Mary Jo?
Well, thank you, Todd, for calling in. And that is the $64,000 question. And I think people were absolutely stunned when the University of North Dakota announced that they were dropping their women's hockey team, which is one of the great hockey teams in this country. And I don't know if there's a backstory there. It's still not clear to me why they dropped the sport. With respect to Duluth, I know that Shannon Miller, the former head coach, was suing, and I don't know where that lawsuit sits right now.
I think that was more of a personal discrimination lawsuit versus the entire program.
Correct.
His broader question, though, was, is this a trend? Are women's sports actually now, is it ebbing? Are we seeing actually a cutting, or was UND the exception to the rule?
Well, I think, you have to look at an individual case-by-case basis. You would have to look and see when a school dropped a women's team. Did they also drop men's teams as well to sort of balance out?
Right.
Because, you know, a school can do that. If you, as long as you, again, it's not sport to sport, it's participation opportunities. So if, for example, a school drops two or three men's non-revenue sports and that becomes equivalent to dropping one women's sports, then you're legally allowed to do that.
That is what you can do. Christine Brennan, a columnist for the USA Today. Did you see this column she wrote today?
I hadn't seen it yet, but I know Christine well.
Yeah, she's been on this show before. She's great. Her column today about the anniversary here of Title IX starts off. This is a little long here, but it's interesting. I'm going to skim a little bit, but she's actually thinking about Title IX in another 45 years. So it starts off, it's 2062. Women have been president for so long, men are starting to wonder whether they'll get the chance again. There are 60 women in the Senate, 250 in the House. Female doctors and lawyers in America, so much that it's becoming rarer every day to hire a male lawyer or go to a male doctor. Women have taken over boardrooms. A record number own or run sports teams in the pros in college. What does this have to do with the girl next door playing weekend soccer, or your daughter playing on her high school volleyball team, or your niece playing basketball? Everything. Why? Why does this look ahead to the future where women are running the country? Why does that tie back in Christine Brennan's, well, not in your viewpoint, why does that tie back to being able to play volleyball?
Well, because if we have a sport called volleyball and colleges and universities offer those opportunities for men with respect to resources and facilities and coaching and training, then females should also have that opportunity. And the other thing is, we really haven't talked about this at all, Tom, is what it has meant for young girls and women now for two generations to experience what it means to be an athlete and how that transfers way beyond anything that happens on a basketball court or a volleyball court. That the lessons that you learn around teamwork, around discipline, around being part of something bigger than yourself, also about, and my student athletes talk about this a lot in my classes at the University of Minnesota, the lessons that you learn when you lose and what it means to lose, because you don't win all the time, and how that transfers to the business world, to any kind of professional career. So I think that it is certainly a cliche, but men have known this for a long time, that sports can lay a foundation for things that happen well beyond what you do in a particular game.
Christine cites, I don't know if you saw this, a survey from Ernst & Young and ESPNW that found that among business women who are in the C-suites, if they're the CFO or the CEO, which we know there's not the same number as men, but of those who are, of the women who are in those suites, 94% played sports, 52% college sports.
Yeah, well, again, it makes my point that the lessons that you learn as an athlete, male or female, well prepares you for life beyond the sporting world.
Christine also writes, those remaining naysayers, the three men hiding under a desk somewhere in Montana who despise Title IX, come out now, guys. It's over. I know what she's going for. She's going for the bold statement. But where is the level of naysaying? Is it 0%? Is it 30%? What? How do we gauge where Title IX lives in the American psyche?
Well, I mean, I think that her argument would be that whether or not, is again, a question that was very much in play when I was growing up, is whether or not girls should even play sports. And if they did, that it was just kind of a pat you on the head patronizing, but not certainly at elite levels of competition, and certainly not something that a culture should invest in. That argument is fundamentally gone. No one, even the most ardent anti-Title IX person, is not going to come out and say females shouldn't play sports. So that argument is no longer part of the national discussion. Having said that, I think that many people could call in today and give us current examples of how female athletes are not getting their fair share when it comes to equity and equality in athletics.
By the way, I'm sure you noted with love the time span in recent years when the Vikings were horrible, the Timberwolves were horrible, the Wild were pretty bad, the Twins were awful, but the Minnesota Lynx were winning championship, and the women's volleyball and basketball teams were just excelling beyond anyone's expectations. So
I was aware of that. I actually, to be perfectly frank,
the best teams in Minnesota were the women's teams.
Yeah, in terms of lack of media coverage, I'm not only aware of it, I've built a career on lack of media coverage of women's sports.
Final minute here.
Yes,
you
sir.
You alluded to it, but where do we go from here? What will be the debates about Title IX and the arguments and the tensions going forward?
I think the question would be, to kind of use a Christine Brennan metaphor here or analysis, is a movement towards more fully integrating sports. So because the issue now is no longer should women play sports and should they have access to equitable resources and opportunities, but what about that young girl who grows up and is an absolutely fabulous baseball player in Little League and doesn't want to play softball in high school and college? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with softball. What about that young girl 50 years from now who says, I don't want to be a great women's basketball player. I want to be a great basketball player. Is she going to shoot for the NBA versus the WNBA? I think that's where we're headed.
And there was that TV show Pitch about the first woman pitcher with a Minnesota native as the lead, and then they canceled it after one season.
What are you going to do?
Mary Jo Kane, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
As always, Tom, thanks for inviting me.
More at nprnews.org.